Army. Love don't come so easily. This doesn't have to end in tragedy.
To the Beecham on June 17th is the War on Drugs. For more information, you may visit thebeecham.com or email events at thebeecham.com. The Beecham is located at 46 North Orange Avenue in downtown Orlando. WPRK would like to thank the Beecham for its support.
Hey, hey, what a beautiful day.
1, 2, 3.
Hey, this is Mr. Katniss.
And Fox Force 5.
And you're listening to
WPRK.
Winter Park, Florida.
Aw, yeah. I think that was cool.
Yeah. Hey, this is Mr. Katniss.
And Fox Force 5.
And you're listening to
WPRK.
When I think of how I thought it would be for us here, We came like children, believing,
trusting with our hearts open.
And with our arms open.
You came with your mouth open.
You did speak and you go back in handcuffs.
I'm going back in a Cadillac.
Air conditioned.
Built-in bar.
Telephone.
And television.
Compatible color.
If you had all that here, why would you want to go back to Puerto Rico?
Oh, even if you didn't have all that here, why would you want to go back to Puerto Rico?
Ah, it's so good here.
It's so good there. We had nothing.
Ah, we still have nothing. Only more expensive. Anita. Josefina.
No, no. Explain Anita now. No. You leave me alone. At least I left. Once an immigrant, always an immigrant.
Hey, look. Instead of a shampoo, she's been brainwashed.
Stop it.
She's given up Puerto Rico and now she's queer for Uncle Sam.
Oh, no. That's not true.
Puerto Rico, my heart's devotion, let it sink back in the ocean. Always the hurricane's blowing, always the population growing, and the money owing, and the sunlight streaming, and the natives steaming. I like the island Manhattan.
I know you do.
Smoke on your pipe and put that in.
I like to be in America. Okay, by me in America. Everything free in America.
For a small fee in America.
Buying on credit is so nice.
One look at us and they charge twice.
I have my own washing machine.
What will you have though to keep clean?
Skyscrapers bloom in America. Cadillac bloom in America. Industry boom in America.
Wealth in a room in America.
Lots of new housing with more space.
Lots of doors slamming in our face.
I'll get a terrace apartment.
Better get rid of your accent.
Life can be bright in America.
If you can fight in America.
Life is bright in America.
Yep, isn't that the truth? Lose the accent. That's right. Normally we'd be listening to Punkonomics with Dr. Benjamin Balick and Jesse Velez, but today we have a different show. Today is all about the so-called immigrants. Oh yeah. Just gonna call this show, Hey, What's Up? And if you notice, I have Tito Puente's Oye Como Va, so it's very appropriate. Yeah, for many of you who are not aware, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens from birth. That's right. As some people out there, including politicians, think that Puerto Rico is somewhere out there by Guam, who, by the way, also do not have any voting rights when it comes to president here in the United States, even though it is considered U.S. territory. And Puerto Rico, tell you a little bit about Puerto Rico. People need to know about Puerto Rico because Puerto Rico citizens have been pretty much in many of the wars that the U.S. has pretty much been involved with throughout history and the world. But let me give you a little bit of history, and you'll see where I'm going at with all this chatter. I'm going to be playing a little bit of Puerto Rican music in between some of my history chatter. But let's go ahead and start. Yes, a Puerto Rican or Puerto Rican Americana, which I've never heard that term before, but I'm actually reading this. Or Puerto Rico Estadounidense. That's another term that I've never heard before. And of course, you know, Puerto Ricans are either born in Puerto Rico or born here. in the United States. Which comes to my mind is that every time, or often I should say, even at work in my prior life as a flight attendant for an airline, an international airline, I used to have people ask me, where are you from? And I go like, where am I from? Okay, well, I'm from San Francisco, last place I lived for 20-something years. No. But where are you really from? So I go like, okay, I was born in New York. No, but where are you really from? Wait a minute, didn't I just tell you I was born in New York? Questions like that, you know, you tend to brush it off, you know, and you just kind of ignore it. But, you know, the matter of truth is that we are the ghost of minorities. The Latino in the United States is by far the most ignored, the most bypassed. Anytime you hear on the radio people talking about oppression, people being oppressed because the color of their skins, you pretty much hear the good majority, and rightly so, is towards the black community. A lot of people do not understand that Puerto Ricans can also be black as well as white. I said a show ago, or it may have been last week on Punkonomics, that Latinos here in the U.S. are white for one thing and black for other things. The middle, which is the brown, which is applies to most of us, gets ignored. It gets lost in the shuffle between the misconception of Taco Bell and all these other marketing franchises that tend to capitalize on the Latino experience, which they really don't have any clue what it is to be Latino, or what the many cultures that we represent, whether it's Puerto Rican, Mexican, or what have you. Truth of the matter is, a lot of us have been born here in the States. It bothers a lot of us that anytime we bring up certain issues, right away gets shoved off to the topic of immigration. I can tell you that that is a sore subject among those of us who are Latinos, who were born here in the United States, or like myself, who are U.S. citizens from birth. Immigration is one thing. It's a sore topic among many races. But it's a sore subject among us Puerto Ricans because we get shoved into that whole topic. Truth of the matter is, and this is my opinion and not the opinion of those here at the station or Rollins College before, you know, I go on my rant. But the truth of the matter is, you cannot ignore the Puerto Rican population. And I'll tell you why. As much as people want to relate to Puerto Rican culture as Ricky Martin, well, that's just one personality, or J-Lo. Personally, you know, that's all about music. But we have other figures that are Puerto Ricans. And so you can hear in the background Tito Puente. The master of El Timbal. We also have other people, which are in law. One comes to mind is Sonia Sotomayor, which the media at first, when she got inducted into the Supreme Court, were talking about how she came to this country as an immigrant. And most of us laugh because we're not immigrants, okay? Which is why the topic of immigration is a sore topic to most of us. Every time our issues get shoved off to the immigration topics. We have a lot of issues that have not been addressed, or have been kind of addressed only to satisfy some individuals. Topics like Vieques, the continuous bombing that we have for the longest time, was being used as a target until the Puerto Ricans and the residents of Vieques started protesting about all the shelling by the U.S. Navy. That still has not been resolved, believe it or not. There's a lot of environmental issues Vieques has not been completely cleaned up, and I will talk about this a little bit later. But let me go ahead and give you a little bit more history about Puerto Rico and Puerto Ricans. It so happens that Puerto Ricans are the second largest Hispanic group nationwide. Okay, it composes 1.5% of the entire population of the United States. It makes you wonder, huh? A lot of voting power there. Now, there's approximately about 4.6 million, and that's basically the U.S. Census. That's what they say. You know, those are facts. I'm not just pulling that out of my magic bag. A lot of us have been called New Yorkers, and those that live here in Florida can relate to the term because we get hit by that term all the time. New Yorker, for those of you who don't know, is somebody who's born in New York, like myself, whose parents are from the island of Puerto Rico and were born in Puerto Rico, which, mind you, they also happen to be U.S. citizens. My parents, like many other of my family, actually went to World War II, Korea, and all the way up to recently, Vietnam, Iraq, you name it, we've been there, all for the U.S. of A. Now, one of the things that really boggles your mind, and it's been brought up on several programs, comedy, mind you, CNN and the right-wing conservative show, Fox News, they seldom ever bring up this topic, but I will bring it up. This goes back to, and you know, what I was saying about our issues not being presented correctly and always being shoved to immigration or being completely ignored because oppression only goes to certain groups, mostly to the black community. And of course, again, I hail the black community for standing up for themselves and making their voices be heard. But in 1901, the Supreme Court said that the U.S. territories were populated by alien races, and that there's no way that they could understand the American way or the Anglo-Saxon way of life. alien races, right? Needless to say that, you know, by that time, in Puerto Rico and a lot of those U.S. territories, you know, anybody born there were U.S. citizens. But it doesn't stop there. This Supreme Court ruling was supposed to be temporary. However, it's still in the books. Makes you wonder about equality here in the United States. And again, you know, Puerto Ricans are considered immigrants by a lot of people here. Most recently, a couple years ago, and I tend to follow politics, as a alumni of Rollins and a student of international affairs, I pay attention. And I remember one congresswoman here in Florida, which totally boggles your mind, referring to Puerto Ricans as immigrants. And she didn't have a clue that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. As a personal experience, I lived in Detroit at the start of my career back in the 80s. My mom, God bless her soul, you know, being always the worried mom, would send me money orders. One day I went to a bank to cash this money order, which was drawn off a U.S. bank in Puerto Rico. The bank teller said to me, asked me, and says, hey, you know, you have an account here? I said, oh, yes, I do. And he says, well, what kind of currency do they have in Puerto Rico? Yeah. Currency in Puerto Rico, excuse me, but it is the almighty green dollar. That is the currency in Puerto Rico. Still today, I run into a lot of ignorant people, even here in Florida. You would think that most people here in Florida, with the whole Latino experience, would know this. But no, it does happen, and you know, that's pretty much them. Some of the things that most of us have noticed, and of course, it's all recent. I mean, I want to make sure that everybody understands that this is not just past history. When you turn on your TV set, most of the programs that you see, of course, are in English, and rightly so. We do speak English here in the United States. But the programming is not conducive to showing off the Puerto Rican culture, or the Latino culture for all that matter. As far as I can remember, one of the programs that I remember when I was a kid was Chico and the Man. Today, on American TV, there is no such programs. Okay, mind you that late at night, and this morning actually, I was watching the Cisco Kid, which actually was a total insult to the Mexican culture. It portrayed these two Mexican, whatchamacallit, vaqueros, or cowboys, as two buffoons, hero buffoons. The truth of the matter is that when you talk to most people here, they assume that you're from Mexico. A lot of people assume that you actually do garden work. For the most part, we are lawyers, doctors, influential people. But at the same time, you know, if we're going to pass on the blame, we definitely have to say that a lot of the problems is actually from the Latino community, the reasons why we're not being heard or our issues being focused. Let me give you an example. I was talking to a colleague of mine here at the station about working in an international airline and having a colleague of Cuban descent who spoke fluent Spanish, not wanting to speak Spanish when he encountered a family who did not speak any Spanish. I had to basically make him aware that not only was it our job to make people comfortable, but it was also our job to communicate as best as we could. And since he knew Spanish, that it would be a courtesy, not only a courtesy, but he should be proud of the fact that he speaks Spanish and represents his heritage. We do have a lot of people in the Latino community like that, unfortunately, who by some reason or another, because they happen to be pale white, blue white, and blonde, that they think that they can disguise themselves as Anglo-Saxon. I will go even further to discuss the problem about these Latinos who come to this country, whether they're immigrants or U.S. citizens. Let's take, for instance, Hollywood. You have Charlie Sheen, okay, who actually is Carlos Estevez. His father, who is an amazing actor, Martin Sheen, also comes from Mexico. A lot of these actors who came to the United States, who are Latinos, changed their names to American or what we call white American names, mostly because either they tried to fit in or they would be discriminated, would not get any jobs. Now, there's been much discussion that, you know, on Punkonomics where we talk about the last name Johnson or Jefferson when it comes to applications for work, meaning, you know, a lot of these corporations identify those last names pertaining to the black community. Now, and most of the Latinos, they usually put their last names, you know, which I have to argue that a lot of them are pretty long and extensive. My parents have that habit of using Velasquez, de Velas, the blah, 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 blah. I only use one last name because it's a lot easier. And regardless, people still say it the wrong way and misspelled it, but that's okay. It's on them. Let me give you a little bit more history here. Puerto Ricans cannot vote for president. Okay, we only have one delegate in the House of Congress, and he has no vote. So he can just stand there, talk his brains out, talk about issues that are pertinent to the island of Puerto Rico, and nothing will be done or heard. I remember one time I was watching C-SPAN. A lot of people don't watch C-SPAN, unfortunately. I was actually in Tokyo watching C-SPAN. They were talking about Vieques, what to do with Vieques. Now, Vieques, for those of you who don't know what Vieques is, a small little island outside of the island of Puerto Rico. It was used as a strategic targeting point for the U.S. Navy or military. Basically, what I know about it is, or at least the excuse that the U.S. was using at the time, was that the island of Vieques, the environment, was similar to some places where we go and do war. Now, at the time when they were using that excuse, we were actually in the Middle East. And it seems to me like there's a lot of desert out there, and it's not tropical. So that totally was a poor excuse. But anyway, I was watching C-SPAN, and our delegate, among many representatives of Puerto Rico who happened to go to the Congress to talk about Vieques, one of them was the governor, or former governor of Puerto Rico, the Honorable Romero Barceló, a Republican, by the way. And they, all of them pretty much stated what was the problem with the U.S. bombing or using Vieques as a strategic, you know, target practice place. For one, there was a lot of residents there. You can imagine waking up early in the morning to the sound of explosions and, you know, mayhem. All day long, that island would get bombed. Needless to say that through the years, a lot of protests and a lot of anger and a lot of showboating came along with that. We had people like Al Sharpton, major showboat, showed up to Vieques and, you know, got himself arrested and, you know, all for the people and all that. Whatever. Truth of the matter is, Al Sharpton is just one of those figures who capitalizes on the media for his own gain. And I will say that anybody who has a problem with that, you can just go ahead and, you know, shoot out an email. But it's the truth. When it comes to local issues or other minorities, Al has a, how should I say, he looks the other way. I know that from personal experience. And I have friends who also have tried to subscribe or at least try to get him to help, and he's just kind of shunned or looked the other way. If it's not on video or it's not anything close to the Rodney King incident, he won't look at it. Same with Jesse Jackson, another opportunist, who only will capitalize on issues that are on mainstream video. But again, let's just keep it simple. Let's keep talking about the Puerto Ricans. Okay. Again, we're so much at fault, like the rest of the Latino community, of staying quiet and not saying anything. I know my parents used to tell me the same thing. Hey, you know, keep your mouth shut, keep your nose to the ground, and just keep on working. You know, truth of the matter is, a lot of these people criticize the black community for standing up and rising. I'm to the point to, hey, you know, the more voices, the better. It should not be about black, brown, yellow, or whatever. It should be about equality. Now, going back to famous people in the Puerto Rican community, for those of you who are as old as I am, and I didn't know this, believe it or not, Eric Estrada from Chips, Puerto Rican. Rita Moreno, which I start up the program with, I Wanna Live in America, which she's singing through this West Side Story. Famous movie, kind of talking about the issues of the so-called immigrant, which I have to remind you again, we are not immigrants, we're U.S. citizens. there's many other people, but I also want to talk about those who actually made it a point to have our voices heard. Now, keep in mind that Sonia Sotomayor is one of the Supreme Justices right now, and kudos to her. Hopefully she'll keep working hard for equal rights and making the sound judgments that Scalia and some of these other right-wing justices failed to acknowledge. Also, one of my favorite actors, Jose Ferrer, also has to be acknowledged as one of those Latinos who decided to go to Hollywood and not hide his identity just to fit in with the white American culture. Now, I'd like to talk about the subversive side of the Puerto Ricans. And one person comes in mind, and that is Pedro Arbizu's Campos. Now, this is a sore subject among my dad and I. Actually, my dad belonged to the Black Shirts in Puerto Rico, which was the Puerto Rican National Party. He goes back and forth on it because he was actually a vet, or he still is a vet, I should say. He's still alive from the Korean War. But at one point, he belonged to the Black Shirts. And Arbizu Campos, to give you a little history behind him, he was a leading figure in the Puerto Rican independence movement. Man was gifted in many languages. He spoke six languages. Graduating from Harvard Law School with the highest grade point average in his law class. Also happened to give a valedictorian speech in his graduation ceremony. Arbizu Campos was probably one of the most hailed figures in Puerto Rico till today. People still talk about him. He was a spokesman, again, for the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party. From the 1930s all the way to his death in 1965, he was pretty much the voice of the disenfranchised Puerto Rican. He was in prison for 26 years for attempting to overthrow the United States government in Puerto Rico. A lot of people here tend to ignore those facts, but, you know, let's continue. In 1950s, he planned and called for an armed uprising in several cities in Puerto Rico on behalf of independence. Now, I'd like to remind everybody out there that that is still a sore subject among Puerto Ricans out there. Some of you may think that I'm a radical, you know. I've had people say, well, go back to Puerto Rico. And it's kind of like, no, I was born here in the United States. I'm very proud of being an American. But I did study in Puerto Rico for a few years. And I was part of a fraternity which Ruben Berrios happened to be in it. He happens to be the president of the independent party in Puerto Rico, or was at the time. So I sympathize a little bit with the independence issue. I firmly believe that Puerto Rico could have followed the Singapore experience, where they could have easily asked to be independent and rise above the ashes and become, you know, similar to Singapore. But, you know, people will argue, my father will argue, that at the time Puerto Rico was being plagued, you know, by diseases and all that, and the U.S. saved us. Well, I don't know to what extent, because still up to today, we cannot vote for president, and we really don't have a voice in government. But continue on with Mr. Campos. Again, he planned and called for uprisings. Afterwards, he was convicted and imprisoned. He died in 1965, shortly after his pardon, and released from federal prison sometime after suffering a stroke. Now, we have another figure in Puerto Rican history, another radical. I'm sure some of my family members are cringing right now if they are listening to this program. We have Lolita Lebron. She was born in 1990 and died in 2010. She was also a Puerto Rican nationalist who was convicted of attempted murder and other crimes after leading an assault on the United States House of Representatives in 1954. Resulted in wounding of five members of the United States Congress. Yeah, history that a lot of people tend to ignore here. She was freed from prison in 1979 after being granted clemency by President Jimmy Carter. Who, by the way, Jimmy Carter is hated by a lot of my friends, which is kind of odd because Jimmy Carter, out of all our presidents, was probably the most peace-minded all the way to today president that we ever had. And I will have to say that, you know, I admire Jimmy Carter because he's actually the only president that's still doing good for humanity, building homes, you know, helping the poor, hands-on, with his own hands building houses. You don't see George Bush doing anything like that, or, you know, President Clinton. You know, sure, they go and visit impoverished countries and give their speech at thousands of dollars for a dinner plate. But let's continue. Lebron was born and raised in Lares, Puerto Rico. She joined the Liberal Party and migrated to New York in 1941. And she joined the Nationalist Parties, gaining influence and also party leadership. In 1952, after the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico was promulgated, the Nationalist Party began a series of revolutionary actions. She became the leader of the group by that time, and she was incarcerated as a result of what she did, in prison for 25 years. She also was active in the Navy Vieques protests, and subsequently wrote a lot of books. And she died of complications of cardiorespiratory infection. Now, sometimes I go to Puerto Rico and speak to my families and former colleagues from the University of Puerto Rico, which I attended to. A lot of them speak about the Puerto Rican experience. Some of them have come to the United States to work. Because Puerto Rico right now is being invaded, not by, you know, an invasion of, you know, some other country, but by rich entrepreneurs who are actually buying, most of the, real estate in Puerto Rico to make all these, high-rise buildings that are supposed to be like hotels. Which the Puerto Ricans, native cannot afford to stay on a weekly, weekend basis for vacation or anything like that. A lot of these, corporations have actually raped the island of Puerto Rico, to a point where the native Puerto Rican has had to come to the U.S. looking for, work because there are no jobs in Puerto Rico, except for maybe tourism. We used to have a lot of factories that did pharmaceuticals. They're all gone, you know. Probably the same thing that happened here in the United States. You know, jobs going off to countries in Asia, you know. Puerto Rico right now is on the brink of bankruptcy. Why? Because just like the United States, Puerto Rico do have a lot of corrupt politicians who are actually stealing the money or using the money to help these super wealthy friends who, by the way, are not Puerto Ricans. They're actually wealthy people that live here in the United States of mega corporations. So anyway, I'm going to come back and give you a little bit more information about the whole Latino experience from my perspective, of course. But I'm going to go ahead and give you a little musical pleasure from Tito Puente, And I'm going to bring on some other Puerto Rican artists who've actually done a lot to make our presence known here in the United States. Here you go, Tito Puente.
District of New York, the king of Latin music, Tito Puente, is playing for his people. They call him the high priest of salsa music.
Tito Puente and his band.
Yeah, there you go. Tito Puente, doing a free concert in a barrio in New York, or what we call the Bronx. Give you a little bit more of history here. And like I said earlier, about part of the problem with the Latino experience here is that our very own people, and definitely have to point out to the wealth, basically get in the way of the movement. For a good example, in 1948, in May, a bill was introduced before the Puerto Rican Senate, which would restrain the rights of independence and nationalist movements on the island. Senate at the time was controlled by the Democratic Party, or el Partido Popular de Puerto Rico, which was presided by Luis Muñoz Marín. And Luis Muñoz Marín was one of the first governors appointed by the U.S. into Puerto Rico, and a lot of people basically hail him as a Ronald Reagan, if you may. I personally think that he actually was a detriment to the island, because he actually suppressed the voices of the native Puerto Rican. The bill was known as La Ley de la Mordaza, or the gag law. It made it illegal to display a Puerto Rican flag, or to sing a patriotic tune, or to talk about independence. Now, this bill basically resembled the anti-communist Smith Law passed in the United States, which was signed and made into law in 1948 by the U.S.-appointed governor of Puerto Rico, Jesus T. Piñero, and became known as Ley 53. And according to the new law, it would be a crime to print, publish, sell, to exhibit or organize, or to help anyone organize any society, group, or assembly of people whose intentions are to paralyze or destroy the insular government. Anyone accused and found guilty of disobeying the law could be sentenced to 10 years of prison and be fined $10,000. Remember, I said that a lot of people don't know that the currency of Puerto Rico is actually the almighty U.S. dollar. And, the law was representative and was a violation of the First Amendment rights of the U.S. Constitution, which guarantees freedom of speech. Now, mind you that Puerto Rico, for those of you who don't know, we absorb all the U.S. laws, Constitution, everything else. Unfortunately, a lot of people here in the U.S. don't understand that even though Puerto Rico is a commonwealth, what they call an associated state, yeah, all the laws, federal laws, are basically enforced in Puerto Rico. Now, Gabriel Campo, going back to probably, I would say he was sort of like the Martin Luther King of Puerto Rico, Gabriel Campos. He had been corresponding with Lolita Lebron from prison, and the nationalist, Irving Flores, and other people like Andres Figueroa Cordero, to attack locations in Washington, D.C. 50s was a very trying time, because you have those who were very outspoken, who wanted independence for Puerto Rico, and then you have those representative of people like my parents, who came to the U.S. With nothing but, their belongings to start off the American dream. So it's a mixed match, of sentiment there between Puerto Ricans. Some of them wanted independence, some of them wanted Puerto Rico to be a state, and that still goes on today. The arguments are still very much in people's mind in Puerto Rico. When I go, I have relatives who get angry at me because I represent the United States philosophy, and rightly so. I was born here in the United States, although I do have a different vision for Puerto Rico, one that's, you know, probably based out of the land of unicorns and all that. But I would have loved to see Puerto Rico being independent from the United States, and I also would have loved to have two different passports. But that's just me. So anyway, let's talk about the trial and imprisonment of these people, because that's important too. Lolita Lebron and her comrades were charged with attempted murder and other crimes. And this is, you know, an attempt on some figures in Congress. And basically, the trial began in 1954. There was a judge by the name of Alexandra Hartsoft who presided over the case and who was also under very strict security measures. Jury is composed of 7 men, 5 women. Their identities were also kept secret from the media. So, I mean, you couldn't go and interview them like nowadays where, let's say, a jury decides to, let go some of these police who have been brutally, shooting, blacks in the streets and all that. You, at least you can say, well, okay, this judge, you know, voted in favor of, you know, letting these criminals go, after they killed some young black teenager in the street. So at least you can hold these people accountable. But back then, no, they were under secrecy. The prosecution was led by Leo Rover. And in a nutshell, LeBron and all these members from the group had defense witnesses, but they really didn't amount to much of anything. So they basically were just kind of shoved off into jail. You know, needless to say that I don't advocate any kind of violence and all that, but at the same time, had the black community not gone to the extreme of putting themselves, you know, laying down in passive resistive movement, they would have gotten nowhere. The Latino community does have to do this. They have to stand up for their rights. They have to be out on the streets. They have to pay the price, as other minorities here in the United States have gone through over the years, because otherwise we will not be heard. So back in prison, Lolita, she felt in shock upon receiving an official notice that her son's death, and remaining silent for 3 days. 4 nationalists were taken into New York, and they were declared themselves not guilty on the charges of trying to overthrow the United States government. Among the prosecution's witness was Gonzalo Lebron Jr., who testified against his own sister. Again, you know, your own people will come and, you know, testify against you. LeBron was stated that the first 2 years in prison were the most difficult, and having to deal with the deaths of her son and mother, communication with her siblings was non-existent, and LeBron refused to receive mail from her sister because only letters written in English were permitted in the institution. Now, you know, that was back then. I don't know if that still applies to the prisons in the United States. Needless to say that some of the information that's also ignored is that besides the black population having, which is one of the largest populations in prison nowadays, the Latino community also comes in pretty close to the black community as far as being victims of the U.S. imprisoned complex for profit. So anyway, after 15 years of her sentence, her social worker told her that she could ask for parole, and she did not display any interest in the proposal, and she never signed the required documentation. Due to a lack of interest, she was mandated to attend a meeting before a penitentiary committee, and she presented a written deposition expressing her position about the parole proposal, as well as other subjects, including terrorism, politics, and the United States' use of the atomic bomb. Following this and other inmates, she reacted with skepticism over her intentions to refuse the offer. which made her distance herself from them and focus her attention in studying as well as writing poetry. During this time frame, LeBron's interest in religion grew, and LeBron's daughter died in 1977. Again, as I was saying earlier, she continued to be very active with the independence of Puerto Rico and participated in many of the protests, you know, against the Navy's presence in Vieques. Let me give you some information, more information about Vieques and what's going on with that now. The U.S. have done quite a bit of cleaning up in the eastern portion of Vieques, and supposedly it's being finished. I'm not quite sure whether they have finished it. I doubt that they will completely clean it up. I remember living in Puerto Rico in the 1974 to 76, where a U.S. oil company basically had to clean up some of the beaches in San Juan Bay. And this was also a big tragic issue for Puerto Ricans because that company really did not clean up. Still to today, and this happened in the 70s, you can still see some of the petroleum washing up to the shores on the nice, what used to be the pristine beaches in Puerto Rico. But anyway, apparently some of the storages that they had, in Vieques, basically were, declared a, natural reserve, by the U.S. Interior Department. And, under a proposal favored by the Navy, cleanup of the area would be deemed complete, even though about 200 acres has not been cleaned of munitions, debris, some potentially still alive. Kind of makes you think about Vietnam, where they're still actually, you know, going to the fields, finding, you know, explosives. A lot of the kids in Vietnam are still subject to being blown up to bits and pieces from all the mines that we left behind during the Vietnam War. Anyway, that said, you know, this 200 acres pretty much sparked up an outrage among activists and officials in Vieques and the main island of Puerto Rico, who favored complete removal of all the debris. It actually has brought up some angry rhetoric. You know, in 2003, you know, they did some of the cleaning, but not until all the protests culminated in, you know, the Sharptons and all the media people who tend to use causes like that as a platform for everything else, but the common issues. Opponents expect that the plan may have been more to do with the cost of cleaning up of the debris, estimated in $50 million. The Navy officials say that it wouldn't hurt the natural reserve by tearing up the dense vegetation to clear up the remaining of the debris. Jose Fernandez Porto, director of the Territorial Senate's Natural Resources Commission and a member of the Citizens Advisory Board that monitors the Navy cleanup of Vieques, said that he fears a partial removal of the debris will set a precedent for other parts of the islands. You found this clean, you can't keep, just give it up back full of bombs, Fernandez says, quote-unquote, right? I'm sorry if it's costly. You should have thought about that before. Now you want to do the cheap version and leave the bombs there. Again, I go back to the environmental disaster of that one oil company. And, of course, I can't remember the name of the oil corporation that actually did the spill back in the 70s. But, again, it was done in the cheap, and we still see petroleum being washed up on the shores of Puerto Rico. before the area became a natural reserve, the military would dig open pits and burn expired 20 millimeter rounds, and occasionally unexploded rounds were scattered in the surrounding brush. Under the plan favored by the Navy, the area has been declared munitions debris would be enclosed by a barbed wire fence to prevent people from scavenging for potentially explosive scrap metal and souvenirs. Basically, that was the take on the manager of the cleanup project. Other parts of the reserve would be open to the public, but the entire area has long been designated as a natural reserve, and the government never intended for the public to have full access. You know, again, you know, the population or the native Puerto Ricans or the native Vieques really had very little to say so. Everything got lost in the voices of the Al Sharptons and the media maniacs, or the clowns, I should say, of politics, whether it's Democratic or Republicans. And again, you know, a lot has to do with the wealth and how much money they're going to spend on cleaning. I'm going to go ahead and give you some more music here. Here's Hector Lavoe and the Funny All-Stars, another big venue that pretty much goes completely across the board as far as Latin jazz, progressive jazz. Funny All-Stars, I remember in my youth, I started pretty much in the late 60s, early 70s, and it had a lot of musicians, artists of all cultures, Celia Cruz from Cuba, tons of musicians that nowadays have either moved on to acting careers or other venues, or consequently have died from old age or other things that, you know, natural causes. But anyway, here's Hector Lavoe with the Fania All-Stars.
This one is called My People. It was actually hosted in Africa in 1974.